This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Michael Puente, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Mayor Brandon Johnson is on the defensive over his hiring of a controversial security firm for the newly built migrant base camp. The mayor's office signed up for a one-year, $30 million contract with GarterWorld to help feed and house some of the over 13,000 migrants that have arrived in Chicago in the past year. We turn to WBEZ city government reporters Tessa Weinberg and Mariah Wolfe for more on what's happening in the city's top offices. Mariah starts by telling us more about just what GarterWorld is.
So GarterWorld is a Virginia-based private security firm that the city is contracting with to provide, quote, turnkey emergency logistics at, yeah, these massive kind of tent camps that the city wants to open. We don't know how many tent camps there will be or how many people they will house. But GarterWorld says they can run camps that house around 250 to 1,400 people. This private security firm has also been the subject of allegations of abusive labor practices and treatment of workers. They were one of the firms that Denver was considering to run shelters and decided not to after those allegations came to light, according to the Denver Post. And this was also one of three firms that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis had selected to help transport migrants to places like Chicago. GarterWorld says that contract actually ended up not being activated, but in a cover letter they wrote to the governor, they had said they were ready to provide, 6,000 workers to provide transportation, security for, getting migrants out of Florida.
So let me ask you this. What services specifically is the Johnson administration looking for, Mariah?
Well, they want to open these large tent encampments specifically to get people out of police stations. Currently, there are probably right now, I don't know the latest number, around 2,000 migrants staying in police station lobbies or airports in Chicago. And so Johnson's goal has been to get people off of those lobby floors and to get people into, places that are frankly just more fit for families. There are babies, there are newborns, toddlers, kids, and families, as well as single individuals staying in police station lobbies. Anyway, so they want to open these big camps, and the services that they'll specifically need are, people to provide food, security, just facilitating the 24-hour shelter. GarterWorld, in a, kind of a list, the contract of what they could offer, also said that they could provide, basic healthcare services like first aid, things for nursing mothers, like just cribs and those sorts of things. So really just kind of like overseeing
pretty much everything.
Place. Yeah. Right.
Tessa, who's pushing back against this move and why are they pushing back?
Yeah, I think it has been a mixed bag in terms of response. I think a lot of advocates and even older persons themselves have said that, this is not ideal, that we're turning to utilizing these base camps and that this is kind of a last resort, but realizing that the city just has limited options. Older persons have also stressed they want to try to look at, other options rather than having GarterWorld itself maybe staff these shelters, something Mayor Brandon Johnson's administration said they're looking at potentially doing. And they've pointed out the kind of, irony that they feel is there, the fact that a company that was hired to, transport migrants out of Florida is now going to, basically get paid and benefit for housing them here in Chicago. Although, like Mariah said, GarterWorld stressed they haven't transported migrants to Chicago. that Florida contract is inactivated. But I think there's a lot of questions still swirling for alderpersons about how is this actually going to work? Are these going to be in the city? How are folks going to get to, school from these places? Are they going to be close to public transit? Just lots of those kind of ins and outs of, operating a shelter where people are going to be living out their lives.
I think Mariah touched on this a little bit, but Tessa, what did Garter World have to say about the criticism facing them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they initially would not answer questions about the Chicago contract, directing questions to the city. On that Florida contract, they really stressed, that was, inactivated, that they have not actually ever, transported migrants, to Chicago, that they've not been transporting people, across state lines like that. And so they've kind of really been defending their record and, touting that their abilities to serve Chicago and to serve, asylum seekers here. And so we'll kind of see what that looks like and to what extent they will actually be used in terms of going forward with setting up these base camps, if they'll actually staff them and what that might look like.
Mariah, do we know if there is a chance that, say, maybe local organizations can work with the migrants in some capacity?
Well, that's what the goal is. So the city recently opened an RFP, a request for proposals process, looking for local community organizations and social service agencies to staff existing brick and mortar shelters and to move away from using a national staffing firm that's charging a lot of money for the city to staff the city's existing brick and mortar shelters. The city has extended the deadline for that RFP to later this week on the 29th. And Mayor Brandon Johnson's chief of staff, Christina Passione-Zayas, says what would be ideal is if they got so much, interest from local community organizations to this RFP that not only would they be able to staff their brick and mortar shelters, but they would also be able to staff these tent camps. And instead of using Garter World to staff the tent camps, they could just use Garter World to build them and then staff them with their own local community organizations that might be more culturally competent, might just understand the community a little bit better and how to navigate, getting all of the things that new arrivals need to get. And so the city kind of said, we went with Garter World because there are very few firms that can stand up things very quickly and help us align with our goal of getting people out of police stations as quickly as possible. And we went with Garter World because the state already has a contract with them, so we can do what's called a reference contract and just very quickly move through the procurement process. They said, assigning a contract with a different firm that doesn't already have one in place with the state would require a lot of time and more red tape. And so kind of expediting that process, get these shelters built, and then wanting to bring in local community organizations. But it remains to be seen if, like, they're going to do that if they'll have enough money for that, because that would be on top of the $30 million they're paying Garter World up to, and if they even have enough interest or availability of local community organizations to staff the tent encampments as well.
Well, turning to another story out of City Hall, Mariah, Mayor Johnson's pick for a police superintendent met with the full city council on Friday. Why does this happen?
So the Johnson's pick for police superintendent Larry Snelling came before the police and fire committee to get a committee vote, and he passed with flying colors and will now go to the full city council tomorrow. Actually, there will be a special city council meeting just for Snelling's appointment. I think Mayor Brandon Johnson wants to get this person in place as soon as possible with the crime that the city is seeing, big spike in robberies, as our colleagues have reported, and, get to work on Johnson's public safety promises. And so in that committee meeting, a lot of praise for Snelling, and we will likely see his appointment pass the city council tomorrow.
Tessa, what so far might be still the biggest hurdle to get the full council's approval at this point, or is it a pretty much done deal?
Yeah, it seems like it's pretty much a done deal. He was voted out of committee unanimously. There was very little pushback, although alderpersons, did have questions for Snelling, about how he's going to, deal, for example, with, how officers respond to mental health calls. He touched on maybe he would consider, redrawing different district boundaries. And so they did have questions for him, but, overall seemed in support. That's pretty typical of how confirmation votes have gone before Chicago City Council. They're usually not super contentious. And so, maybe that's a part as well of just that this was a very community-driven process. They've, been, briefed on who the candidates were, and that the Snelling is a longtime veteran of the department, too, where I'm sure many of them have interacted with him before.
Mayor Johnson's team is looking to scrap Invest Southwest, at least its name. That's the signature development program from Johnson's predecessor, Lori Lightfoot. What's going on there?
Yeah, so, every mayor wants to come in and have their stamp on neighborhood development. Mayor Lori Lightfoot, for some, took an unprecedented approach to that and really tried to focus on the south and west sides after years of disinvestment. Mayor Brandon Johnson says the goals of investing in the south and west sides and focusing on investment in those areas remain. That will be a key component of his overall goal of building a safer, better, safer, stronger Chicago, as we hear him say again and again. But they are light on details of how his approach will look different from Invest Southwest. They say they will scrap the name and rebrand their investment strategy, saying his mayor, Brandon Johnson's deputy mayor for business and neighborhood development, Kenya Merritt, who's spent decades in leadership roles at different departments throughout the city, so really knows city government well. She said, I think there's a perception of Invest Southwest, particularly with folks that live in neighborhoods, of an unfulfilled promise. And that's not what we want to continue to perpetuate in terms of branding. And so they won't be calling it Invest Southwest, but really unclear about, other than the name, what will be very different. I think they, kind of take issue with how long some of the projects have taken to get off the ground. And Kenya Merritt had said, the one thing that the mayor has impressed upon her is that they want to see results, development. Mm-hmm. As former the Department for Planning and Development, Maurice Cox, pointed out in an interview to Natalie Moore, said recently that development doesn't move on political cycles. It does take, 5 to 7 years for projects to get off the ground.
Sure.
So we're going to see how exactly they're going to speed up those processes. She kind of hinted at maybe there's a different way to fund them in less complex ways. And that could help maybe move them forward. Invest Southwest is funded through a mix of sources, including private and public funding, and that public funding also comes from tax increment financing. And so maybe kind of simplifying the way that these projects are funding is one guess. But sure. Again, in an interview with me, she didn't have very many details quite yet.
Well, Tessa, you recently reported that at least two alder people have chosen to forego a pay raise. Who are they and why are they rejecting that raise?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so alderpersons Rosana Rodriguez-Sanchez and Byron Cicho Lopez, according to records, we had records requested and received from the budget office, were the only two alderpersons to submit basically these signed forms saying that they are choosing not to accept a 2.24% pay raise that's set to go into effect for all alderpersons next year. The city's budget office would not confirm that means all the remaining 48 alderpersons, the mayor, the city clerk, and the city treasurer will be getting that raise, since officials only had to opt out of it to not receive it. In the past, they've routinely released the names of folks, so it's a little unclear why this year is different. And they pointed to, info being released in the mayor's proposed budget that's set to come out next month. But Cicho Lopez and Rodriguez Sanchez will remain at their current salaries, and they are currently among the little over 30 alderpersons who make the highest in city council right now. And Cicho Lopez says, he wanted to not accept the pay raise this year to stand in solidarity with workers, and pointing to efforts before city council limiting the subminimum wage and wanting to stand in solidarity with, people who are just fighting for kind of working people who are fighting for, basic salaries to be able to get by and live. So,
well, unfortunately, we ran out of time. That was a very quick conversation. I love having you guys here. So that was WBEZ City Government Reporters Mariah Wolfel and Tessa Weinberg giving us the latest on what's happening at City Hall. Thanks, Mariah and Tessa. That episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Brenda Ruiz. It was edited by Meha Ahmad and Ethan Schwab. Stay up to date on the big moves happening in City Hall at WBEZ.org. Get the news, politics, and culture happenings in Chicago by subscribing to our podcast. That's all for this morning. I'm Michael Puente. Sasha will be back this afternoon.
Love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.